This is Cameron Hampton. I'm an artist, and you're listening to Blood Noir.
Joe, you haven't left for that case yet?
Nope.
You're leaving Morty to wait for you. In the meanest part of town?
He'll be all right. Morty can handle himself.
Joe! You're reading!
Looks that way.
I don't think I've ever seen you crack a book open. Let alone hold one.
Yeah, well, this one concerns us. Blackout City Confidential by Mark Slade. How does he know what goes on around here? 6 audio scripts and a new short story featuring us and that crumb bum, Doberman Diggs. Look here, Lily. There's even pictures. Art by Lisanne Lake.
She captured my figure right.
Not hard to do, Angel. Nobody could get that wrong. You're perfect.
Oh, Joe.
Get Blackout City Confidential and Blackout City Short Story Collection, both available on Lulu.com and other outlets published by Horrified Press.
There is light, and there is darkness in our world. There is good, and there is evil. The living go on with their lives, and the dead, they carry on as well, but they're not always so well hidden. At least not in the Ghostlands. Schlock Magazine presents Ghostlands, an anthology of ghost stories. An artist in Napoleonic Spain uses his mind to create a masterpiece and revenge. A man and his friends must face the truth, or else be haunted forever. In the future, a collector of space vessels gets more than he bargained for. In a fantasy land, a ghost haunts the Garmanda Mudura Lake. A police detective and a pathologist try to unravel mysteries surrounding bodies missing. Salt. A man is given a trial and a judgment, not to his liking. Featuring stories by Mark Slade, Kevin Reese, Jason Norton, Thomas M. Malafarina, E.S. Wynn, and Joshua A. Prowse. Edited by Gavin Chappell. With cover art by Lisa N. Lake. Ghostland is published by Rogue Planet Press and is available on Lulu.com and other outlets. What if a man can invade other people's dreams to rob a bank? What if technology is originally developed with the greater good in mind, but ultimately becomes corrupted by human greed? What if you are stuck in an asylum and know you will never get out? Through the dark recesses of the dream world come strange stories of horror, terror, and wonder, and a mysterious question. How can so many people have the same dreams? Dark Dreams is an anthology of stories from the minds of Mark Slade, Thomas M. Malafarina, E.S. Wynn, D.S. Scott, John C. Adams, Emery and Rich, Jason Norton, P.J. Griffin, Mr. Deadman, David Ludford, Joseph J. Patchen, Mark Tompkins, Sean Clay, and Kevin Race. Cover and art by Cameron Hampton, and edited by Gavin Chappell and Mark Slade. Published by Rogue Planet Press, and is available now on Lulu.com and other outlets where books are sold.
Yes?
Oh, hi. My name is Hannah Bay. From the Gazette Times? The newspaper. You called us, remember?
Ah, yes, of course. Come inside, please. My name is Ordell Seetha. I run this organization.
Yes, so you've said on the phone. A secret organization that has controlled all media and manipulated all history for more than 100 years. Look, I'm not big into conspiracy theories, so I'm having a hard time believing your claims.
And what claims were they?
Well, you said that you are a part of an organization calling themselves Wormwood Prophets Society, and you worship a godlike creature that has been slowly taking over humanity.
I said that? I do not believe I would say such a thing.
Look, you called me, mister. You made these crazy accusations. I have you on tape claiming you helped spin history. That you helped Hitler in World War II, the same time helping the Allies. I think it's baloney, but my editor sent me out here anyway.
Yes, I believe you are right. I did say those things.
You said you have proof that God exists.
Yes. Yes, I do. If you would step this way.
What the hell is that thing?
Drink in his beauty. Marvel at his intelligence.
Why is he in a tank of water?
Listen to the stories he spins. Believe the truths he tells.
I can't take my eyes off of it.
He is forever nameless to his people, but we call him Wormwood, and we are his prophets.
I can't take my eyes off of it.
Wormwood Prophets Society features stories by Mark Slade, Jason Norton, T. Fox Dunham, K.E. Moore, Phil Thomas, and D.W. Gillespie, with art by Chris L. Burke. This strange and bizarre anthology is published by Rogue Planet Press and can be found on Lulu.com and other outlets that sell books.
Blood Noir is a crime and horror anthology show. Stories about people caught in desperate times and only have one way out.
I'm sure you're wondering why you received this tape from a random stranger. But is it really random? Am I really a stranger? Or are we connected in some way? To a web of lies and deceit? Possibly murder? You see, I hear things, see things. I know everything. To protect myself, I need these stories to be told.
That was a blast from the past. I was smoking dope and having it off with my English teacher. I got all A's. Okay, you're listening to Rocky's Ruby Garage, and I'm Rocky, of course. That was a song called Get Your Rocks Off by a band named Silver Machine. Strange history with those guys. Named after the song Silver Machine by Hawkwind, they scored big in 1982 with that instrumental I just played. They were a singles band in the early 70s, Bubblegum Rock. A bit like the Osmonds, with feedback, lots of harmonies. Didn't do albums until 1981 when they changed management. Guitarist Sammy Kane took over after frontman Davey Blue left to pursue a career in heroin, which he found great success with when he overdosed a month later. Okay, I know, that was a cheap shot, but hey, I'm a cheap guy. A year later, Silver Machine had a huge hit, number 22 on the Billboard here in the States with Get Your Rocks Off. In Britland, that song went to number 12. In Japan, number 1. Wow. Soon after, tragedy struck. Bus skidded on some black ice in Minnesota. Only band member to survive was Sammy Kane. Well, enough of the history lesson. Let's move on to our next tune in this countdown.
Ah! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you!
Sammy? You okay in there?
Fuck off!
I'm just checking on you, okay?
Yeah, I said fuck off! I'm not a retarded child. I can take care of myself.
I'll remember that the next time you get coked up and can't use the phone or the washing machine. Sound like a plan? Asshole.
Ah, fucking cunt! I need to change managers is what I need. Playing fairs? Summer concerts? Blast from the past? Bullshit! Not even top billing! Fucking last! What's next? Rock and romance cruises?
Baby, what's going on?
Shut the fuck up. I can't think with all this crap in my head. Memories and such. Fucking past is hurting my head.
Do you need to do another line, baby?
No! I need to think. My Oh, my head is so clogged up.
Come back to bed, baby, and I'll unclog it.
Let me be, please.
Ugh. I'll have to take care of myself then. For fuck's sake! I'm taking a fucking shower!
Open up, Sammy. That reporter from Rock's Webzine is here to interview you. Come on.
God, you look like shit, Sammy. I mean, you really look like shit. Wow.
I feel like shit.
Anyways, this is Marty Barnes from Rock's Webzine.
What the fuck is a webzine?
Nice to meet you, Sammy. Always loved your music.
Yeah. No, seriously. What's a webzine?
Oh, boy.
He's kidding, right?
No, I'm afraid not.
Okay, well, you've been on the internet.
It doesn't matter, Marty. Sammy, it's a magazine.
Yeah, great. I knew that.
Start recording now.
What? With your phone?
Let's get started. Have a seat, Marty. Oh, wow. Angel must still be here.
Of course she's still fucking here. She's never going to leave.
Should we, do this another time?
Ignore him. Ask the questions. Sammy, let's get this over with.
I'm fucking ready.
Okay. I've always wondered, Sammy, where did Get Your Rocks Off come from? And, what the hell does that mean?
Just what it means. Have a good time. Get off. Orgasmic, you know?
Where did that mean-sounding, gritty guitar opening come from?
I was out of tune.
Of course you were.
Look, whatever you do, don't stare at the Frenchman's girl.
I got it, okay? Don't stare at the Frenchman's wife.
I don't think she's his wife.
I got it, man.
The guy is crazy. That's all I'm saying, Sammy.
I don't give a shit what he is, Billy. I just want to get my hands on the starch he's selling and get the hell out of Oakland.
Hold on. That's the room. Those are his bodyguards.
That's obvious, Billy.
You ready?
Just going on stage, man. You're a different character every night.
Well, look what we have here. A couple of rock stars, huh? Looks like a couple of dancers we ordered last night.
Boss. What?
The rock stars are here.
Well, show them in, you fool.
Hey, I thought you said this guy was a French dude.
No, I said that was his name.
Go on in, cuties.
Relax, man. They're just having a laugh.
Somehow I get the feeling those two ain't joking. Who knows how they get their rocks off?
Hey, what gives?
Come on. You don't gotta touch my ass three times.
Hey, be still, Cupcake. They're clean, boss.
We're not like that, man.
Everybody's like that. We all got an angle to play. God shines a light on you boys.
Do you have to be so loud? I'm trying to sleep, baby.
Well, I'm sorry, Precious. We'll go into the other bedroom.
Hey, man, stop staring.
I can't help it. She's so beautiful.
Hey, rock stars. You coming or what?
Yeah, yeah. We're coming.
Keep your eyes off my girl, friend.
Hey, look, I didn't mean...
You couldn't handle her anyway, rock star.
Just give us the coke, asshole.
Hey, cool down, Sam. He's just joking.
Boss, run!
Get down! Sammy, get down!
Over here, Billy! Under the bed!
You fuckers ain't getting my stash!
Hey, Sammy. Everyone is dead, man. Oh, boy, this is fucked up. Hey, did you hear me?
Yeah, I heard you. I got the coke. It was in this book under the bed. Weird shit in here. Reads like bad poetry from an Edgar Allan Poe story. The drawings are fucking grotesque. Wait. Even the girl?
I didn't see her. She must have gotten away. Hey, man. We better get... Neither of us can afford to get caught up in this shit.
Yeah. Let's split.
Wow. That's some story.
Sammy. You really shouldn't have told that story.
Why not? It's true.
It makes you look like a drug addict and a criminal.
I was. Still am. Don't know about the criminal part, but it's true.
So, I can publish this?
Sure.
No! God, Sammy!
Yes or no?
Do whatever the fuck you want with it.
Jesus. You can't collaborate in the story if you don't have a second witness.
And who would that be?
Billy Gold.
That is true. He died on that bus wreck in Minnesota. To be honest, that really doesn't matter. He told me the story in an interview, and people will just think it's entertaining, that's all.
See, Darlene? It'll be fine.
Give me a break. All right, I don't care. Fine. Do whatever you want. Whatever.
There's a curious song off the Get Your Rocks Off album. The last song?
I died of an overdose back then.
Excuse me?
No. Sammy, don't tell him. Not this one, not this story.
Okay, but I asked about the song Hound of Doom.
Yeah, I was getting to that.
Okay, I'm going to my room. I've had enough of this. God, I can't do it. I can't. I'm done. Oh, and if you want to kill your career...
What career? Working for peanuts and I only get the shells?
Fuck you, Sammy. You manage your own career.
I will, you cunt. Get out of here.
Should we continue?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Talking about this... everything clears up my mind. Not so... clogged up.
Don't hog it, old man.
Don't move so much on the bed. You knock the candles over. Hey, they're playing my song. Hound of Doom.
Wow, this is freaky.
Read some more from that weird book. This seems to get you going.
Hearing my music on the radio, it gets me going. No more of that book, baby.
Whisper that name, darkness of old, rattle the bones of the fallen. Hear the cries of the scorn, the screams of the torture. Send to me the hound of doom.
Oh, that's really deep. I need another line.
Sammy! Oh no! Oh, Sammy, don't die on me, baby! The candles went out! Oh God!
I just died.
You've got a show to play.
Hey, man! The bus is swerving. Can't you keep this thing on the road?
Billy! You're distracting the driver. You know, fat boy needs to concentrate to do anything.
I'm trying to keep us all from getting killed. Sammy, maybe we should stop and call to cancel the show. Nothing out there but black ice, man.
No way.
My man has a show to put on.
Quit bringing everybody down, man.
Sammy, I'm telling you. Sammy. Oh, man. Sammy. We got thrown off the bus, man. Oh. Hey. Where are you, man? Sammy? Is that you?
Stories are just wow.
All of them are true.
Okay, I'm sure they are.
You doubt me?
No, of course not. I think I'll just go and get started writing this article. What the hell?
Oh, so good. Mmm.
Congratulations, victim number 6, Sammy Kane. You get to live another year. Blood Noir, Episode 7, Get Your Rocks Off, starring Pete Lutz as the Stranger, Paul Sading as Sammy Kane, Tanya Milojevich as Darlene, Matt Weller as Rocky the DJ, Eden as Angel and Groupie, Jeff Niles as Marty, Atticus Jackson as Billy, Victor Aurelius as the Frenchman, Ryan Clayton as Bodyguard Number 1, Stefano Echunike as Bodyguard Number 2, Jess Roberts as Bodyguard Number 3. Blood Noir, created by Mark Slade. Credit narration by Tanya Milojevic. Music by Carpenter's Notch. Theme music by Carpenter's Notch and Audionautix.com. Written and directed by Mark Slade. Thank you for listening. This was Rocket 88. What if a man can invade other people's dreams to rob a bank? What if technology is originally developed with the greater good in mind, but ultimately becomes corrupted by human greed? What if you are stuck in an asylum and know you will never get out? Through the dark recesses of the dream world come strange stories of horror, terror, and wonder. And a mysterious question. How can so many people have the same dreams? Dark Dreams is an anthology of stories from the minds of Mark Slade, Thomas M. Malafarina, E.S. Wynn, D.S. Scott, John C. Adams, Emery and Rich, Jason Norton, P.J. Griffin, Mr. Deadman, David Ludford, Joseph J. Patchen, Mark Tompkins, Sean Clay, and Kevin Race. Cover and art by Cameron Hampton, and edited by Gavin Chappell and Mark Slade. Published by Rogue Planet Press, and is available now on Lulu.com and other outlets where books are sold.
Thompson showed up late, sporting his dark blue tie that Joan had bought him. In the 14 years of marriage, she always bought him a tie for his birthday, and a dark blue one for that matter. He stopped at the door of the auction room, fiddled with the tie. "I'm not even sure this tie goes with a light pink shirt," he said and sighed. From the door, he could hear the auctioneer's booming voice asking for another bid. No takers. Then the gavel banged, and he announced that Smith had won the bid. Thompson made a noise from his throat. "I hope that bastard isn't here." Thompson ran a hand up and down his face. He was tired. If he wasn't out chasing a soul to take to the other side, then he was at auctions all over the world buying souls for the agency. Everyone thinks it's only one spirit in a robe and holding a scythe that's death. Actually, there are several agencies out collecting. And there's two things every agent of death hates. One is for a soul recently deceased to run or go missing. Two, for another agent to steal a soul from underneath an agent. The last thing is what Floyd Smith was famous for. He hated him. Even though they both had worked for Axel Agency as partners until Smith started his own agency. Thompson opened the door to the auction room with an audience of 20 or so agents, laughing, clapping, some thumbing their nose, and the auctioneer announcing his presence. Thompson waved at the other agents, smiled big as if he were a celebrity. He looked around. Smith wasn't there. "How nice of you to join us, Mr. Thompson. Your seat has only been empty for 3 hours," the auctioneer said through the microphone. "Oh, come on, Gamble," Thompson yelled out. "I only bid on the best souls." Thompson found his seat beside a nervous Calvin, his partner. "Thank God you're here, Steve." Calvin was wearing that horrible Chex Mix suit. The squares of red and white always made Thompson feel nauseous. "You heard what Ford said on Monday. If we don't snag a good soul he can sell, we're out of a job." "You worry too much, Calvin." Thompson pushed his glasses off the tip of his nose, brushed back a strand of his balding head. "We'll get one. By the way, if you lose this job, you can go back to being a gym coach." "Oh, but your wife still thinks you do that, hmm?" "What do you tell your wife, Steve-O?" Calvin said in a mocking voice. Thompson turned to the auctioneer, tried to pay closer attention to the event. "None of your damn business is what I tell her," Thompson smiled to himself. "Just don't let Smith outbid you," Calvin whispered. "He's not here." Thompson saw the picture of a senator placed on an easel. The agent next to them whispered to them, "Smith was here. He was called away for something urgent." "Oh, great! What luck, eh, Steve-O?" Calvin placed his huge hand on Thompson's shoulder. Thompson jerked away. The man was a giant. Played 3 years as center for the Broncos before blowing out a knee. Now he was an agent of death for the Axel Agency, and not a very good one. He and Thompson has had too many lost souls. They slip away and haunt someone or some building or even an object. Once a deadline to exit the souls to the other side is missed, they are gone for eternity. For the senator, Thompson bid $450. It jumped to 500 credits. Thompson raised his hand 600 credits. Burke from Denholm Agency bid 1,000 credits. Thompson screamed, 1,500! Calvin jabbed Thompson in the ribs with an elbow. Thompson gave him a look, daggers in his eyes. "The agency only gave us 1,800 credits. "Back off," Thompson growled. "I know what I'm doing." Thompson heard the bidding close at 2,500 credits. His jaw dropped to the floor. "What? What happened?" he cried out.
"The bid closed on you while you were talking," one of the agents said.
"Which of you bastards?" Thompson stood, his face beet red with anger.
"It was Smith," someone said.
"By phone."
Thompson kicked his chair, cursed under his breath. Thompson placed a hand over his worried face. He was done for. He would surely lose his job, or worse, be retired.
"This young lady was recently deceased," the auctioneer said. "As a matter of fact, this last acquirement only died 20 minutes ago."
Thompson sat in his chair, barely looked up. He crossed his arms, shook his head. They removed the senator's picture from the easel and replaced it with a beautiful dark-haired woman smiling, as if there were no cares in the world.
"This is Jenna Smith, died from a car accident," the auctioneer said.
Thompson's eyes lit up. He moved his lips to say the woman's name.
"That's Smith's wife," he whispered to Calvin.
Calvin stopped picking his nose and looked up.
"Don't do it," Calvin whispered back. "Please don't bid on her, Steve-O."
"He can't bid on the soul of a loved one, Calvin.
If he does, he could be retired. Those are the rules.
Let one of these other jerks do this. For God's sake, Steve Smith used to be a friend. Thompson wrinkled his nose.
Screw him, he said, and topped out the bid. $25,000.
The auction room went silent. That was all the credits we were allotted for the year, Steve.
Calvin buried his head in his hands. If. Thompson pulled out the company credit card and slammed it on the auction treasurer's desk. I'm going out, Calvin. I want to go out with style.
But if you lose this soul, you'll be retired. Calvin shook his head. And I will, too.
No. Thompson watched the treasurer swipe his card. You are no longer my partner. I'll get the paperwork drawn up after I do this. The treasurer handed Thompson the credit card. With the other hand, he signed for the sale. You won't be retired. Thompson tried to smile, but it turned into a smirk. This was Thompson's justice. He was sick of this business, taking souls across into the light or the darkness. It wears on a person's mind. Sometimes you even dream about it. He hated Smith so much, he was willing to be retired. Who were they kidding? The company doesn't retire you. They incinerate you, and your soul becomes one of those whispering voices in the winds during a storm. Lousy way to go. Well, if he made up something, showed what a jerk Smith was, how many souls he'd stolen from him, they would understand how letting the man's wife become a lost soul was just cause for revenge. They might let him go and wait for him to die. Then his soul would become a whispering voice. That would never happen. The auction had given him info on where Smith's wife may be. He tried the hospital. No dice. He tried the school where she had taught first grade. No spirit wandering the school's halls. The last place was a summer home on a main beach. Thompson arrived just in time for sundown. The sun illuminated the overcast sky, bright reds and oranges and a wild pink and blue beyond the horizon. He saw a woman standing at the edge of the pier, quietly watching the waves dance across the elegant river. She was nearly transparent in her sundress, her dark hair whipped around her face, courtesy of the rolling wind.
"Jenna," Thompson called out to the woman.
She turned quickly. There was a crease between her eyes to show her confusion. She looked at Thompson as if she only heard a voice and saw no one. Then she smiled slightly, after recognizing a person belonged to the voice.
"Oh," Jenna said, "you're here to take me."
"More or less," Thompson nodded. Jenna laughed. "Men are always so vague." She looked at him. "I was hoping I could get a chance to say goodbye to Floyd."
"Did you love your husband?" Thompson approached her cautiously. If he ran to her, she might jump into the river. But maybe he wanted her to. He couldn't make up his mind.
"Yes," she said without hesitation. If Thompson let her go, she would haunt Smith until he died.
"Would you like to go for a walk?" Thompson put out his hand.
Jenna bit her lip, reached out for Thompson. From a distance, a voice called out for her. She pulled back her hand. Thompson turned, saw it was Smith running up the pier.
"Jenna, no! Don't take his hand!"
He was coming up fast, waving his hands.
"Please, Jenna! I'll take her across, Thompson, you bastard!"
Jenna stepped backwards. All she saw was a blur of a body coming towards her and a muffled voice screaming at her. She looked like a deer caught in headlights. Fear ran across her face. Jenna turned toward the waves crashing against the pier.
"Stay back, Smith. What are you doing? You know you'll scare her away."
No sooner had Thompson caught Smith by the arms, Jenna was gone. The current had taken her, enveloped her in its white underbelly. Smith and Thompson stood, both at a loss for words. Smith burst into tears. Thompson closed his eyes, let go of Smith. Thompson walked away. He was tall, very tall, the man they call Jaren. He stood at the exit of the train cart and glanced over at several corners of the train station. He was mustached, balding on top, hair parted in a ridiculous schoolboy fashion. His face showed of a man very serious and stern. His suit was a bland gray with a fat blue tie that most definitely didn't match. Jaren found a cab parked a few feet away from the newsstand behind the train station. The only cab not bothered by anyone. He walked up to the cab, opened the door to the left rider's side, and slid in on the noisiest vinyl covering he'd ever come across. The cab driver was in the middle of his lunch, a messy hamburger where the sauce sat comfortably on his chin.
"I'm not on duty,"
the cabbie said, his mouth spitting out chewed bun on his shirt. He casually wiped it off. He was looking at Jaren in the rearview mirror. Jaren sighed. "Look, I need a ride into Vandy. I'll pay double the rate." The cabbie finished his burger in one swallow. When he was done, he laughed.
"My God, friend, no one rides into Vandy. Not in the least. It's a good 56 miles from this train station. It's also the most boring town in America."
"As you say, but I still need a ride. It includes the tip." Jaren avoided the cabbie's gaze in the mirror.
"It would have to, friend. On top of the fare and double the rate."
He started the engine, and the cab coughed and spat out a dark cloud of fumes that nearly choked Jaren to death.
"And away we go,"
the cabbie said in a sing-song voice. A few miles down a road that took them across a hill of green grass and cows with eyes the color of the black hole. Still, Jaren would not look his driver in the eyes. This annoyed the cab driver to no end.
"For you to pay this amount of money, not rent a car, must be pretty important to go to Vandy," the cabbie said.
Jaren thought a moment. He kept his eyes on the scenery. "Yes, I suppose it must be," he retorted. The cabbie waited a few minutes. He laughed, looked in the rearview mirror.
"Why didn't you rent a car, friend?"
Jaren breathed through flared nostrils. "I can't drive," he said.
"You're kidding. At your age."
The cabbie turned around briefly to see Jaren's reaction.
"Business there?"
Jaren thought again, his eyebrows lowered. "I'm not sure why I'm going there," he said. He saw a pair of confused eyes in the rearview mirror. He looked away.
"Yes, business."
The cabbie felt the iciness of Jaren's voice. He shrugged and said,
"I don't care what you do."
The ride was a long one for both driver and rider. Still, almost any conversation would end with a false start. The jazz that came from the radio annoyed both, so it would get switched off several times. Jaren nearly fell asleep, staring out the window a number of times. He wasn't sure, but he felt whenever his eyes were getting, so too was the cabbie's, as the car would jerk back and forth on the road between lanes. In 2 hours by the back roads, they reached Vandy. The cab pulled into a town reminiscent of white picket fences and clean roads, the stuff only existing in most minds and TV land. The cabbie seemed to get excited.
"Man, I haven't been here in years."
The cab pulled into the parking lot of the only hotel in town. Jaren paid the cabbie. The stack of bills rested in the palm of his hands, then rolled them up in a rubber band and placed them in a cigar box under his seat.
"Hey, you have a nice visit, mister."
The cabbie turned to Jaren, who had already slammed the door to the cab. Jaren walked into the lobby. A group of elderly people dressed in black parted in the middle for him to pass. He stood at the desk, waiting for the two clerks to acknowledge him. One clerk, a woman with dyed black hair fashioned into a beehive, looked at Jaren as if she'd seen the tax man at her doorstep. The other clerk, a man dressed in a black tuxedo, had eyes that bugged out of his head and was constantly blinking.
"Excuse me," Jaren said. "Could I have some service, or do you have to be a member?"
They exchanged looks, but the male clerk stepped forward. He blinked twice, said in a high-pitched voice,
"Very droll, sir."
"I'd like a room," Jared said. They exchanged looks. Whispers came from the circle of elderly people. The male clerk blinked twice.
"I'm afraid I haven't any rooms available, sir."
He blinked twice more.
"Oh, no." Jaren gave a tug at the lips of what resembled a smile, but it could also have been gas. "There are very few vehicles in the parking lot. This, what I believe, is the only hotel in town."
"That matters not." He blinked twice. "The parking extends down the street, sir. We have a town pageant, sir. Folks from the adjoining counties are also here for the occasion. He blinked twice more.
I was not aware there was holiday.
Good day, sir. He blinked twice, went back to the female clerk and their conversation.
Jaren was dumbfounded. He'd never experienced such rudeness. As he left the hotel, he glanced back. The circle of elderly folk were staring. One lady had her head bowed, mumbling a prayer. Jaren had no idea where to go next. He decided to walk toward the courthouse. In a long row of houses, he'd seen a cafe in the tradition of a malt shop. He'd passed a drugstore where four men, dressed in black and blue suits, sat in rocking chairs.
"Excuse me, gentlemen," Jaren stepped toward them. They exchanged uneasy looks. "Could any of you point me in the direction of a bed and breakfast?"
"What the hell would you want with a bed and breakfast room?"
one of them said in a shocked voice.
"That's a silly question," Jaren fired back.
"I'll tell you, son, but I don't think Haley will give you a room,"
another said, stubbed out his cigar. "Why wouldn't she rent me a room?" Jared was exasperated. They exchanged looks. The third man sighed. He stood, pointed.
"Go a ways, two blocks up this road. You see a sign for Lafferty Avenue? Take that. The third house on the left. You'll know her house. She's got a sign that says Haley's Place."
"How convenient," Jaren said sarcastically. "Thank you, gentlemen." He walked away, knowing they were staring at him. Jaren knocked on the door of a quaint two-story house that was painted powder blue. The curtains in the front room moved slightly, placed back carefully. The door opened, and a woman in her early 50s, dressed in black, appeared smiling.
"Yes?"
she said in broken English. She focused her eyes on the man standing at her door, and her breath exited her body uneasily. She stepped back and tried to close the front door.
"Wait!"
Jaren caught the door with a hand.
"Please, I'm only here for a room."
They struggled with the door, the woman finally winning the battle.
"I have no rooms left,"
she screamed and slammed the door shut. Jaren walked away, running a hand across an exasperated face. "I only want lodging for the night," he said to no one in particular.
"What's the matter, friend? Can't get a place to stay?"
Jaren looked up, and it was the cabbie who brought him into town. Jaren smiled slightly.
"It seems I rub people the wrong way."
He walked up to the cab that was idling in the street. He leaned in, resting his arm on the side mirror. "You haven't left yet?"
"Nah, I'm enjoying this place. People are friendly. Well, to me. Food here is wonderful. Gee, mister, I don't know what you did to these people, but they treat me like a king."
The cabbie thought a second. He slapped his hand on the steering wheel.
"I got it. Come with me, and I'll get you some food and a room."
Jaren was more than willing. Like a child who received the best Christmas present ever, he giggled as he jumped in the back seat of the cab. An hour later, cabbie and Jaren were parked along a curb by the empty school grounds. Jaren was slumped over in the back seat, with his hand casually draped over his face. The cabbie fiddled with the car radio. Neither was saying much. Cabbie couldn't stay quiet for long.
"Like I said, I don't know what you did to these people,"
cabbie said, almost in a whisper.
"I didn't do anything to these..."
"Oh, hell with it." Jaren kicked the back seat.
"You'll want me to take you back to the train station, say where you're from?"
Jaren sighed. "I don't remember," he said, lost in thought.
"Okay, don't tell me."
No, I swear, I don't remember. I look in my wallet. It says on an ID card I live in Santa Barbara. I really don't remember."
Cabbie reached back there, took the wallet from Jaren. He looked through it.
"John Jaren, 5504 Furrow Drive, Santa Barbara, California. Looks like this is your wife."
Cabbie showed him the photo through the plastic casing inside the wallet. A wedding picture of Jaren holding hands with a young blonde woman dressed as a bride. He is a groom.
"No pics of any kids, but one of a Great Dane. You really don't remember anything? Job? Parents, where you grew up?"
Jaren shook his head.
"Geez, friend, you got it bad. Hey, the town pageant is starting. Let's go look."
Cabbie jumped out of the car, starstruck. Jaren reluctantly followed Cabbie out of the car and down the street. He stood beside Cabbie and hundreds of onlookers as a band of people dressed in black walking behind an old hearse led by a horse and a driver with a whip in one hand, reins in the other. The onlookers were tossing lilies at the feet of a woman walking directly behind the hearse.
Ain't that something, friend? Right out of a PBS drama, huh? Reenactment of some kind.
The cabbie noticed Jaren wasn't at his side anymore. Jaren had rushed out into the crowd of marching people in the street, fighting his way to the woman right behind the hearse. When he reached her, Jaren turned her around, tore the veil from her face. It was the bride from his wedding picture. He fell backwards onto the back of the hearse. The horse had stopped in its tracks. Jaren peered inside the hearse window. He saw himself lying there in the velvet lining of the hearse, arms folded across the front of his black suit, eyes closed, resting so peacefully.